Hi, this is Steve Roost, and you're listening to Health Tech Hour on UK Health Radio. Each week, we give you the best news, views, and interviews from the health technology world. From CEOs and founders to entrepreneurs and clinicians, the companies and people that are shaping the future face of healthcare. All on the world's number one talk health radio. Hello and welcome to this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost. Each week we bring you the best news, views and interviews with the founders, clinicians, CEOs, leaders, investors that are changing the face of healthcare in the UK and beyond. As regular listeners know, I am a CEO and co-founder of a health tech business myself, which is called PocDoc. And PocDoc is in the business of revolutionizing access to screening, diagnosis, and treatment for cardio, metabolic, and renal diseases. If you'd like to know more about our Healthy Heart Check, which delivers the equivalent of an NHS health check in the comfort of your own home within 10 minutes, please head to pocdoc.co. That's pocdoc.co. And thanks as ever for PocDoc for supporting the show. Also, as I say every week, and I mean it from the bottom of my heart, thank you very much for everyone listening wherever you are. So we love being live on UK Health Radio. So if you're listening to us right now live, we love that. Thank you so much. Thanks to Johan and his incredible production team for helping us put the show together. Thank you also if you are listening on any of the podcast channels, Spotify, Apple, etc., or if you're watching on YouTube, or if you are watching the short form content on Instagram. So it's at Steve Roost on Instagram. If you want to follow me, we cut up the show, we pick out the best bits and we put them on Instagram over the next week or two. What a show we had last week with Amber Fodagel and the story of how she got her app, the Pregnancy Plus app, to number one in the app store, in all app stores all over the world, was a crazy story. And if you didn't listen to it and you have any interest in how to get an app to number one in the app store, I would recommend you listen to it or have a look on them or have a look online, because we've started on the YouTube channel to put out the content around that. It's an crazy story, made even crazier by the fact that she didn't spend a single dollar on marketing. She went to number one globally for pregnancy apps without spending any single dollar on marketing. It was incredible. So, and then also to learn about her mission with her new venture, 28X, which is around tackling what she perceives as the commercial exploitation of women and girls by period tracking apps, particularly around this data ownership, data processing, data controller piece of it, which I hadn't really considered before, but really opened my eyes to it. So if you want a good show, I can completely recommend last week's one, obviously up on all the channels. It would also, that the show with Amber was a great show to have before we lead into this one today. So onto today's show, we have someone that I love spending time with, who always speaks her mind and always brings the energy. So no pressure there. Today's guest is Andrea Berkowitz, who is the CEO and co-founder of Vera Health. And Vera Health are I think they were founded in the UK, but they're now operating in the UK and the US. But their mission is around extending life expectancy for women, beginning with menopause, or targeting menopause as the first condition. Andrea has had an unbelievable career prior to starting Vera, which includes working directly with Bill and Melinda Gates. And Vera also recently announced a groundbreaking partnership with Tesco. So for the first time ever, customers at the UK's leading supermarket can access menopause care when they go in and get their vegetables or actually any product, actually, to be fair. So Andrea, how are you? Welcome to the show.
Yeah, I'm good. Thank you. A lot of pressure to have lots of energy, but it's okay.
That's okay. So you had your coffee? You good?
Completely. I'm probably over-caffeinated, which is my general state these days. I tried decaf and someone suggested mushroom coffee to me yesterday, but I think actually I just want to live in a state of hyper-caffeination.
Yeah, well, some people do. Some people operate best there. I've seen that stuff around mushroom coffee. I don't know if it's legit. I have not had any.
I don't know, but two women that I regard as highly intelligent, thoughtful people have offered me mushroom coffee recently, and they both with kind of, like
Buzzed.
big eyes, buzzed eyes, said that they have like made the switch. They're never drinking normal coffee again. So I mean,
All right. Does it taste like coffee?
I mean, I asked that question and they said yes. I mean, the brand in the US that people use is called like Mud. Drink mud or something like that. So that's not terribly appealing to me.
No.
And the, yeah, look, I like coffee. So I'm not looking for a substitute. So I don't think I'm the target market for these.
Fair point. So, again, thanks for coming on the show. And I'm really interested to get into a whole bunch of stuff. So, what I would love to do, I think, is if it's possible, is why don't we just start with a bit of an overview about why you
Yeah.
started Vera,
Totally.
and as opposed to like tackling health or women's health in a different way, like what was the particular kind of philosophy or methodology or sort of conditions that came together to convince you that it was a this was the direction that you wanted to go in, and then we can spiral off from there.
Totally. And it is a really good question because there's lots of ways that you can tackle women's health, broad set of questions, issues, problems. So I have always been interested in women's health. And I know when you're a founder, you have to like come up with this founder story. And so you piece together these things that make it seem like it was ordained or always the case that like
Yeah,
Vera Health would
your
start
destiny.
in 2020. This was my destiny. And that's true and not true. I mean, I really have all like I volunteered at Planned Parenthood when I was, a teenager. I have a longtime Emily's List donator. Like I really have always cared about this topic. When I was at McKinsey, I did quite a bit of work in family planning. It's how I met the Gates Foundation. I was working with them across Africa on like how do you scale up access to contraception. It's always been an area of interest to me. And then when I made the decision to leave McKinsey, I joined Bill and Melinda Gates in the Middle East, and I thought, gosh, there, I have this grant-making portfolio. I can make such a difference in women's health. This is going to be fantastic. And that is true. Like a lot of women's health is wonderfully influenced and affected by philanthropy. Like lots of access is, given through philanthropy. There are so many great charitable efforts in women's health. But I think I had a bit of a epiphany that, first off, it's strange to depend on charity and philanthropy for only women's health. Like, shouldn't that be a bit more mainstreamed? And isn't it the responsibility of health systems to cover that as well? And then also, what I realized is that charity and philanthropy plays a really important role in access to healthcare services. To be fair, not just women's health, but actually the kind of like innovation of the goods and services, like the actual healthcare pathways. I don't believe that philanthropy and charity are really what's going to drive that. You want the resources and man and woman power and just the force of, pharma companies and large scale life sciences companies behind that if you really want to change the actual like care pathway, the drug someone takes or the app they use or whatever. And so I came to the conclusion that if I really wanted to do something, at the cutting edge of women's health that really transformed outcomes, that it probably wasn't going to be philanthropy and charity. So I left that sector and was really fortunate to take a bit of time off. And so I decided to like talk to everyone I'd kind of ever known, have coffee with everyone, ask them to tell me who I should have coffee with, introduce me to your friend, introduce me to your friend. And so I spent this year talking to mostly women in their late 40s and early 50s because that was my network. And completely by like chance, I basically spent, several months having conversations about menopause.
Okay.
A relatively easy person to talk to. I
Right.
am like not scared of taboo topics, like happy to chat about your health. And I knew I wanted to do something broadly in women's health. And so invariably it would come up. And so I just like over the course of that year started to learn that what I thought I knew about menopause was completely inadequate. Like I kind of thought it was a couple of sweaty instances, you have a hot flash or a hot flush, depending on which side of the Atlantic you're on, and maybe some sleepless nights, and like that it was almost funny. But then I realized through all these
Did
conversations.
you're sorry, you that was you thought it was kind of like a no great shakes type
Yeah,
of thing.
totally. Like I'd seen some women have a hot flash, and I was like, yeah, that looks a bit disruptive, but I certainly didn't think it had the potential to be debilitating for some women in the way that it is. I certainly had no idea that it was joint pain, that it was mood disruptions, that it was pelvic floor issues, that it was like, I had no idea the breadth of kind of like under the hot, like what's under the hot flash.
Right.
And what I realized, because of who my network is, like I was talking to women who were incredibly educated, who had means, and they were struggling to get care. And I thought, if that kind of upper echelon, for lack of a better word, that kind of access and moneyed group doesn't have care, then there is a huge problem. Like the average
Right.
person or the person without means, like, has no access to care. And that just seemed crazy. And I think, like, what really led me over the edge on this was the kind of the implication that women 48, 50, 55, so arguably at the top of their career, whatever they're doing, right? Wherever they are, probably earning the highest salary that they're going to earn in their lifetime. That's so important that if you want to be in the workforce, you can be in the workforce, you need to be in the workforce, that you can be. And the idea that people were exiting early or avoiding promotions or like cutting back their hours or doing anything to kind of affect their, like, I just saw the long-term financial impact of that and the freedom that comes with that sort of financial, or the lack of freedom that comes with that financial decision or implication. And I thought, this is just like a really interesting area that I can't believe has been happening for always. I had a mom, my grandmother, teachers. I had, like, there have been loads of women in my life that if I would have opened my eyes to it, like, I would have seen it. And I didn't, and I'm a good person. So, like, not calling anyone out. And I just thought, this is a super interesting area. And it seems like we kind of know what care looks like. You can get on hormone replacement therapy if that's what's right for you. There's some modifiable risk factors that you, like lifestyle and behavior change pieces that you can do. Like, it's not magic. We kind of know what treatment looks like, but for some reason, women aren't getting it. I was like, okay, this is a connection problem. So maybe I can play a role in it. And it really effing matters. So I want to play a role in it. And so get menopause. And then I just got like totally obsessed.
And like, the people that you were talking to, this network of 50, 40 and 50-year-old women, predominantly, you said, were they both sides of the pond, UK and US, or predominantly one?
I would say they were super global. So, like, they were in America, they were Americans in the UK, they were Brits in the US, they were in South Africa, they were in Europe. I mean, it was like the kind of consistency of that message was, or of that experience was what led me to believe, like, oh, yeah, women are women. Like, yes, the experiences are different and society plays a role in how it's more and less taboo in different places. All these things are definitely at play, but like, menopause is consistent.
Consistently, I get that. And so, like, how did you go from that point of being like, okay, I really, effing care, to use your language, around, and Johan will thank you for just saying effing as well, by the way, because that's the one rule that we have on the show, which is like no swearing. Look, he's just come back on. He's come back on and said thank you.
Yeah, I made a promise to myself that I wasn't going to swear, so I thought I do
No, please
appreciate
don't.
it too, but for me.
It's not, we have to do a whole bunch of editing. But there's still a few leaps from that into craft, because I so here's what I here's my sort of having look, obviously I'm not a woman, so menopause I'm unlikely to ever go through. Never say never, but it's not very
Just say
likely.
never. Yeah, never.
Yeah, we can say never, we can say never. But it's such a broad area, and I know that women are women, like you said, and things like that, but there's so many different ways you can access that topic, and a kind of continuum from, just providing, being, or I guess one end is like private clinic, almost like just a private version of the NHS, the other end being kind of some sort of more softer informational service. So, like, how did you craft that passion into what has become Vera?
Yeah, good question. I think that it was clear to me, like, I came from a big business background, right? Like, and I knew that I wanted, if I was going to do this, I wanted to do it at scale. And I am not a writer. I am also not going through my own menopause journey right now. And so kind of the content idea didn't really make sense to me. And other people were doing a great job of it too. Like, there were various celebrities talking about menopause at the time that I was thinking about starting Vera. And the NHS has great information, and increasingly other journalists are writing about it. And so I think that's really important, and I'm so glad people are doing that, but it's not healthcare. And I knew that I was gonna, like, like I was focused on a business that was actually going to deliver healthcare. And then I think, as you say, on the far end of the spectrum of like a private clinic, I mean, we are a private clinic, but because scale was really interesting to me, I knew that I wanted to see what role technology could play in helping us build that scale. And so I think that, I guess maybe I'll tell the story of how we started, because
Yeah,
or of what product
please.
we started with ultimately, because I think that kind of details it. So first off, I think I should introduce my co-founder in absentia, because it sounds like I like did this in a vacuum and I like 100% did not. So her name is Dr. Rebecca Love. She's a chronic disease epidemiologist. So her expertise is in, lifestyle and behavior change. And you'll see that as a thread through what we ultimately ended up building.
Hi,
So
Rebecca.
yeah, hi, Rebecca.
I've met Rebecca a bunch of times, and she's fantastic too.
Agree. Agree. I'm sure many of your conversations on this podcast have been about how important it is to like find the right co-founder and all of that.
Oh, I mean, we.
So,
I'm not. I think I'm not sure off the top of my head. I've had anyone on who didn't have one or more co-founders.
it's
But
so important.
I think particularly in health, my thesis would be that it would be very difficult to build a really big, successful health technology business without having a multi-founder team,
Oh, 100%.
just purely because of the different specialisms that you need to knit together.
Yes.
I'm
I
sure someone's going to prove me wrong,
yeah,
but
good for them. Yeah, I just wouldn't want to do it. So even if it's not a like a truth for other people, I can say for me building this company, no, thank you. I'm glad to have a partner in crime or a partner in not crime.
health.
Yeah, but I think her background really informed how we tackled this problem to start with. So the kind of first thesis that we had, which turned out not to be true, but the first thesis we had was in the UK, like there are loads of GPs with experience that you can go to and chat to about your options for for hormone replacement therapy. And it's covered by the NHS. And so what's really missing is all of that lifestyle and behavior change advice alongside. So what's missing is like, I'm supposed to like change my nutrition. I'm supposed to manage my stress. I'm supposed to do all these like sleep hygiene tactics so I can sleep better. Like,
Because like the GPs were good at the clinical pathway, so goes the thesis, but they were less good at the wraparound
yeah, because it's
piece.
so much and you've got 7 minutes and trying to give all of that lifestyle advice. Because also, come on, you as patient, so busy. And so also like eat better, sleep better, stress less. It's a bit like, okay, I'll try. And so our theory was clinical care is probably working or working for some people. And so what we need to do is fix that gap so that women aren't downloading 10 apps, Noom for weight loss, Sleepio for sleep, Headspace for a little bit of meditation, NHS Squeezy for their pelvic floor. Like we're going to bring all of that into one place and we're going to be the app for menopause. It's going to be dynamic based on your symptoms. So if you're dealing with sleep and incontinence, you have a totally different experience than the woman dealing with weight and mood changes. And that's what really matters because I'm not trying to solve your menopause. I'm trying to solve your symptoms. And so we built that. It's like, in the age of digital therapeutics, the app is called Stella. And I think it is still the best app for menopause. It is evidence-backed. It is really easy to use. It's beautiful. But ultimately, what became clear is everyone was messaging us on the app being like, my GP didn't answer my questions about HRT. How do I know if HRT is right for me? Or I'm taking this combination of pills and patches. Is it right? And we realized that actually the gap was bigger. And if you weren't offering care, then you weren't actually solving the problem. And so I think to go back to the question that you did ask about like what aspect, we came to realize that you have to give a complete care pathway if you want to make a difference in menopause. And so that is clinical care. So an individual conversation about your HRT risks and benefits, all of the lifestyle and behavior change in a really easy to use way. And also probably a few over-the-counter products like a hand cream or a moisturizer, but like not the long list of supplements and lotions and potions that other people might be trying to sell you. And so now the way we're tackling it is that online menopause clinic. So affordable end-to-end care.
So is it did you know when you were you created Stella? Why did you call it Stella, by the way? What, is there a story
Yeah.
there, or is just you
I mean,
picked
there
a female name?
no. Oh God, in picking a name, it's like really difficult because you have to make sure that like there are no horrible people with that name. There's no creepy stories and all of that. Yeah. So no, Stella was a British Canadian, Rebecca's Canadian, and she had been kind of like an early women's health advocate, and not a eugenist. So yeah, Stella.
Okay, great. Good. Yeah, those two major categories there. to tick, not a eugenicist and a fan of female health. So when you when how much, I know it might be difficult to quantify now, but you know, when you set Stella up in the first place, you kind of were offering the different services around pelvic floor and nutrition and things like that. How much or how many women, or what kind of quantification around that sort of organic feedback about, yeah, but what about my HRT? Yeah, but I went to my GP and they didn't really answer my questions. Like how much of that were you getting? I know it's quite a hard thing to probably quantify.
To say, but like I would say vast majority.
Wow.
Yeah, like, and it just because I think that if you're kind of in the dark and you haven't been able to have a conversation with a GP, or if you felt like you were not validated there, you weren't listened to, or you were fobbed off, you had a bad experience, then someone kind of telling you that you should do some pelvic floor activation or like try and sleep better tonight, honestly, it feels insensitive. And so what we realized is the app had to be a companion to good clinical care. And so if they weren't getting it elsewhere, then we needed to provide it.
Wow. Okay. Well, let's pick this issue up of clinical care afterwards, because I think it's a obviously POC docs medical regulated medical device, and so I think there's a really interesting discussion around what's the impact on the business of choosing to be a care provider versus not a care provider. Yeah, I think there's a really interesting discussion there, which we can pick up after the first of these commercial breaks. So we'll be back in 2 minutes with my guest on this week's show, Andrea Berkowitz, who's the CEO and co-founder, along with Dr. Rebecca, of Vera Health, which is a leading women's health platform that's currently available in Tesco's. We'll be right back.
The station that makes you feel good.
If optimizing your health and well-being is on your to-do list, then let Revive Active, Ireland's number one supplement brand, help you put back what life takes out. All-in-one comprehensive formulas created to offer you maximum benefit, whatever stage of life you're at, and with a range that supports everything from immunity, energy, cardiovascular health, joints, cognitive function, menopause, and even beauty. We've got you and your family covered. Premium ingredients packed into a powerful daily sachet. Simply mix with water to activate for a flavorful health drink. Perfect at home or on the go. Revive Active. Available at selected Holland & Barrett stores, Well Pharmacies, and online at Amazon and reviveactive.com. Super supplements for a super you.
When you vacation with Norwegian Cruise Line, every day is a new day. Get a taste for Barcelona, then savor incredible dining options back on board one day. Connect to ancient history in Athens, and then disconnect completely in our spa another day. Wherever the sea breeze takes you, come aboard and experience a different tomorrow with NCL. Visit ncl.com, call your travel agent, or call 0333-336-1472. Norwegian Cruise Line, Ships Registry, the Bahamas and USA.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the second part of today's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, your host, and my guest today, Andrea Berkowitz, who is the CEO and co-founder of Vera Health. So before the break, we kind of got into this thing around clinical care provider versus non-clinical care provider. Why, in your opinion, or it might even be an objective fact, actually, is that so important in your space, do you believe?
Yeah, I mean... Yeah, it's like not a fact, but I believe that if we just take the UK, it's true in the US as well, but there's a real postcode lottery about who has access to menopause care through the NHS. It's gotten so much better in the last 4 years. And so for a load of women, they really can go to their GP and get great care. And that's wonderful, but really not all women can, and all women deserve it. And so I think it is just menopause care is clinical. Like for a lot of women, we are not saying that everyone should take HRT, not at all. Please don't get it twisted, but I am saying that every woman deserves an individualized and specific conversation about her risks and benefits based on her medical history and her symptom profile of like, what are her options to make that choice? And then she may choose to take it or not, choose to take it and stop, choose to delay and maybe take it later. Like those are all her options, but that needs to be based on like a really good clinical interaction. And then ongoing, like menopause can 7 to 10 years of symptoms, right? And so like you
7 to 10 years. Wow. Yeah,
totally. And so you need someone to there for ongoing care, like for and also to say like, is this, you know, I sometimes make a little bit of a joke that everyone comes to us and is basically saying like, am I normal? Am I crazy? Sorry. Right. Am I normal? Am I alone? I try not to use the crazy word.
Okay. So, yeah. We don't say that.
Am I alone? Right. Yeah. And we try to say like, yes, you're normal and you're not alone. But I think that clinical care is just a big part of like answering those questions authoritatively and correctly. And like, I think for too long, people were diagnosing themselves on like menopause Reddit and or using their friends, like, you know, and everyone's menopause is unique and going to be really different. And so like I'm dealing with pelvic floor issues and my best friend is having trouble sleeping. We can iterate a bit, but we should
not.
That was
one of the questions that I wanted to get into. So like, how, and again, it might be one of those ones where it's difficult to kind of explain, but we're a broad church. And one of the reasons I like doing the show is to like ask questions that I genuinely don't know the answer to that probably other people don't know the answer to. But some people might already know. So apologies to those people listening. But how many different variations are there of possible treatment, clinical treatment? Like how, like, you know, because when we did the NHS menopause show a few weeks ago with Bucky and Linda Barker off Changing Rooms, shout out Linda, there was a lot of discussion, like you just said, almost exactly the same words around adaptation to the woman, adaptation to the particular instance, adaptation to the symptoms, adaptation to their medical history. So like, how much adaptation are we talking about? Like, how much variability in treatment are we really kind of covering?
I think that the adaptability and personalization is not because there are 1,000 choices that you're bringing to bear. It is more just that the woman deserves to know that it is the right option for her and for her symptoms. And so there are going to be variances in the type of medications that are available to her. We talk a lot about HRT, which people also call MHT, but there are other options as well. And, you know, a clinician is going to discuss those with her based on her risks and benefits and what she can and cannot take, whether she can take hormones or not, or if something else is a better option, or if she has other conditions going on and there are contraindications, like that conversation that needs to happen. And then the kind of influx of lifestyle and behavior change into that, like which bits matter to her and don't. So like maybe pelvic floor strengthening is going to be a big part of that because incontinence is the symptom that is disrupting her life the most. And so it's about getting all of those pieces right and also normalizing and creating like a validation moment and saying, yes, this is what's happening. This is the sort of thing you can expect. These are the sort of things that will help. And if they don't, let's talk again. So I think, yeah, it's not like we need to create, it's not like the gap in menopause care is precision medicine.
Right.
It's that like we do have a bunch of tools and we have to piece them together for the right symptom profile for that woman and the medical history that she has. And that takes like just a bit of work.
Yeah. And like also like the, you know, and Bucky said this, that they're trying desperately to sort of improve overall GP sort of awareness or give them a toolkit around this stuff. But it might take some time
exactly
for them to do that. And it's also, it may not necessarily ever be best suited to a 7-minute GP consult.
Totally. And I think that's why we're really excited about the Tesco pilot, because I do think that pharmacies or retail pharmacies are like a really good place for this, because you think you can kind of get everything there, right? Like, well, with the addition of us, so you can do a consultation online, then you can pick up your medication in the pharmacy and you can pick up the kind of other things that you might need. Like I said, maybe that's, you know, a hand cream because of dry skin, or some different protein rich bits from the food aisles or kind of whatever that is. And I think that something we really care about is bringing our costs down as much as possible so that we can create an affordable alternative that still gives people, you know, more than 7 minutes and an ability to discuss their specific case and get the care that they need. And listen, I get it. It's private care. I think the NHS should be able to do this. I think lots of women have an awesome experience on the NHS in menopause, but they all don't. And so, it doesn't happen that way for everyone.
Yeah.
And we're trying to fill that gap between Harley Street and the NHS, where a lot of women can pay a little bit of money to get great care. And I take it very seriously that we have to give a great product in return if someone's paying for it. But I do think that menopause is ripe for low cost private care in the UK.
That makes sense. I think it's going to take a while before the postcode lottery evens itself out for sure. And so how is the Tesco thing working? What is it? What'd you get?
Yeah. I mean, it's so brand new. Announced on Friday. So.
Yeah. It's really cool. I mean, I think it's, credit to Tesco as well, obviously,
totally.
You know, for doing it, because it's very, it's pushing the envelope of what, because Tesco isn't just a pharmacy. They're a hardcore retailer as well.
Yeah. And look, I think that we got in on the coattails a little bit of them wanting to do this. And so the partnership is also, Bupa is part of it. Like, they're making kind of slightly lower cost private care available in their health zones, which are their rebranded pharmacy. And so credit to Tesco entirely. The team is so good. They're thoughtful. They really do believe they can play this important role in their communities. They offer NHS services as well. Like, I think it's very cool. So yeah, the way this pilot works for us is the health zone, so the relaunched pharmacies, they have some information about us. The pharmacists know all about us, and there's kind of in-store advertising. And so if people are looking for menopause care, then they're directed to us. And so they'll fill out our online assessment, which is really easy to use, and see a clinician through us virtually. And then they can pick medication in store. And then we also direct them, Tesco has partnered with a group called MTIC, where they highlight the kind of menopause friendly products throughout the store. And so that's also there. So there's kind of quite a big menopause conversation, I would say, going on in a Tesco right now. And that's great.
Yeah. So that means that they can use Stella, right? Women can use Stella to, they interact with Stella, but they don't have to go into Tesco's to interact with Stella. They can interact with Stella just digitally online.
Correct. They do have to go into Tesco to pick up their meds, though.
Yeah, sure. No, of course.
Yeah. Exactly. So they don't have to go to the pharmacy and go to the consultation room. Not at all. Like, they can learn about it there, do it at home, do it in the shop. So the pharmacists were trained as well by us. So if they do want to do it with a pharmacist to ask some questions and that sort of thing, they can. But for the most part, absolutely, I think that people will probably do it at home and then pick up their meds on their next in-store experience.
And we're like, what were the, were there any, I know you can't, I'm not asking for anything confidential. I guess it's such a big step. It's such a big step. And I think it's really, it must be connected, I would imagine, to the pharmacy first piece of work where they expanded the services massively, but Tesco didn't have to expand into menopause care. So I think it's a really interesting, I think it's a really amazing move that they should be applauded for on this.
Yeah, everyone we have met in the Tesco pharmacy team has been so patient focused, patient first, really excited about expanding care. And look, I think that in our model, you know, when you think about D2C health, direct consumer healthcare, or private health, the point is to get that patient on and then have a subscription model that's ongoing. I actually don't think that that's the model here. I think that in the UK, what we want to do is fill that gap where a woman kind of, you know, isn't going to see a GP with a lot of menopause experience, maybe where she is, comes to Stella, you know, gets a prescription, it's working, you know, 90-day check-in, 3 months on it, it's working, it's helping with her symptoms, and then actually helping her transition to her GP, right? This is the prescription that I'm on, it's working, and then she gets back into the system. And what I really want to do with the Tesco partnership is just plug that gap to help a woman, have a conversation about her menopause, explore her treatment options, and then when it's working, maybe she stays with us, but actually maybe she's able to go back to her GP, have that conversation because she's the kind of health literacy around menopause for her has gone up, and she's able to have that conversation, explain the symptoms, explain the treatment that she's on. We only prescribe based on the NICE guidelines. And so the prescription that she's on is going to be totally, you know, in line with what she would have gotten had she gone to an NHS GP. And so I'm happy to have an ongoing relationship with that patient if we can keep helping them, for sure. But also going back into the NHS works for us as well.
I'm going to ask about the NHS in a second, but I'm going to ask about this one thing. So when we did the show with the other menopause show, I, as I do on my Instagram, I slice up the show and I put the clips online, and I put this one particular clip up where Bucky was talking about HRT, Bucky being the NHS specialist. And she was taking, I would say, a very NHS view on it, which is basically in the middle without backing one thing or another, or without sort of committing. And within the clip, it referenced a Panorama show that happened. Okay. It was a passing reference in the clip. And one of the big claims in that was that that show was around the, let me get the phrasing right, was that the HRT prescriptions above the standard dosage of estrogen, I think, was a higher dosage of estrogen than what the recommended was. I don't know whether the recommended is like 100 milligrams and it was like higher. I can't remember exactly what it was. But there was a lot of controversy in the comments. It was like split 50-50. It was like, yeah, that's, you shouldn't do that. And then the other ones were like, actually, no, you should. And the show was just a hatchet job about one private clinic. So like, I'm not asking you to comment on the private clinic or anything, but there's obviously some debate here around what the clinical guidelines allow you to do and things like that.
I think that hormone replacement therapy has had such a long history of kind of misinformation and media distortion of studies and the implications of those studies. And so the kind of like information out there in the Google universe, in Reddit,
the Googleverse,
Facebook, and all of that is really confusing and really hard to follow. And I think that when you layer like a kind of lack of information and some disinformation, plus companies trying to sell you lotions, potions, and clinical visits, plus a taboo nature where you aren't necessarily going to talk about this with your friends or with your GP, like that is just a really ripe ground for like taking sides and for kind of a battle. And I think that that's really tough. It's like, I like a lot of women have not gotten great care and have not been listened to and have not gotten the medication that they deserve, needed, or wanted. Like, and
I know, and it's weird. It's like everyone seems to forget that part, which is like, it doesn't really matter which side of it you're on.
Yeah.
The system's not working brilliantly for anyone.
And so I think what I can say as a positive is like, you now really do have like mainstream, you know, the New York Times is writing about menopause, and I do, you know, I think some people are like, oh my God, menopause is everywhere. And I think,
well, it's kind of been there since forever.
Yeah, fair enough. And so I think that like the more kind of, you know, I love when I see menopause articles in The New Scientist or in one of the Nature, like in big science publications or kind of mainstream media like The New York Times, The Guardian. And I think that just more of that, and like, you know, sciences can be complicated and nuance has to be explained. And each woman, like, you know, if your friend was told to take one kind of course of treatment and you were told a different one, that's like not necessarily a problem, or that's based. And so I think, you know, there can be no doubt that there's a long history of misinformation and of lack of information, and now and then a variety of kind of actors filled that space. And I'm hoping that now, you know, with the Menopause Society in the US publishes great things, the International Menopause Society, the British Menopause Society, like we've got a lot of great industry bodies publishing, you know, really easy to understand, super accessible information. We try to do that too. And so, yeah, I think it's just really tough.
I think it seems like it's sort of, there's enough good actors now moving in the right direction that hopefully the bad actors get weeded out, because it was probably a vacuum for a while, I guess, kind of.
Yeah, and I think some bad actors didn't even know they were bad, like were really trying to gather the information and get it out there to other people. This helped me, maybe it'll help you. And I think that now having, you know, more clinicians in the mix, more I mean, I don't know about you, but like I see a new clinician on Instagram like every day like and
Yeah,
now,
we yeah.
you
We
know,
had that discussion around like, you know, where's the line between something being really benefit, and it did the same thing with Amber actually around like awareness around period tracking and menopause and reproductive health. Is like, where's the balance between more awareness is good versus quality of the information that's being put out, particularly on social?
oh, totally. I mean, I have a friend who's a doctor, and she's on social media a lot, and she has a phrase that's something like, "I am a doctor, I'm not your doctor." And like that is a difference. Like what you see on social media, like they are not your doctors. They
No,
might be
and you
doctors.
shouldn't take it that way. Yeah, that makes sense. Right. So after the break, after we come back, it's our final break. I want to dig into two more things. One is the amazing move that you've made from the UK back to the US. And I want to dig in a little bit so that we can share, we'll get your thoughts on the differences and the pros and the cons and sort of why you did it that way. And all that stuff I think is really super interesting, particularly as clearly with the Tesco partnership, obviously things are going really well in the UK and how menopause care sort of differs in the US. And then I'd like to just touch a little bit on like whether or not on what kind of thoughts or views the NHS has had around this, your sort of blended model of digital first clinical care to try and fill a gap between what they offer and, you know, Harley Street, which I think is a really interesting way of explaining it. So we'll be back with my guest this week, Andrea Berkowitz, for the last part of this week's Health Tech Hour. We'll be right back.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hey, are you tired of the irritation you get down there from pads and other bladder weakness products? Tena Sensitive Care Pads are the first ever bladder weakness pads enriched with a skin comfort formula. The skin-friendly layer in combination with the soft, 100% breathable materials helps protect intimate skin from irritation. And as always, you have triple protection from leaks, odor, and moisture. Gynecologist tested and dermatologically approved by the Skin Health Alliance. Look for Tena Sensitive Care Pads with the Skin Comfort Formula online and in stores now.
Apples and pears, beef and Skittles, cider with Rosie, common or garden, Ant and Deck. Fish and chips, mum and dad.
UK Health Radio and Health Triangle Magazine. Each is good by itself, but enjoying both is always better. Add Health Triangle Magazine to your monthly health regime. Check it out at ukhealthradio.com. Strawberries
and cream. A cancer diagnosis can be scary and stressful for everyone involved. Hello Love is a contemporary living space and well-being center in central London where anyone can come and learn about illness prevention and non-toxic practice. Inside, you will find a vegan restaurant, juice bar, and holistic dojo that encourage lifestyle changes to help heal mind, body, and spirit connection. Cancer patients are offered free sessions. To find out more, please visit us at hellolove.org.
UK Health Radio, the station that makes you feel good.
Hello and welcome back to the final part of this week's Health Tech Hour with me, Steve Roost, and my guest, Andrea Berkovic. So let's talk about the US and menopause care in the US, because obviously, as I understand it, you are a US citizen, a representative of the United States of America, but you chose to start the business in the UK, and now you're expanding back into the US. So how did that sort of come about? What's your view on the US and the kind of, how does the menopause care situation compare to the UK?
Yeah, look, I wish I could say there was some like deep insight into starting the business in the UK. I was living here at the time. That is the insight. Like,
That's a good point though. That's a good answer.
I met Rebecca here. And so we started here. I think that you can sort of make the case that the menopause conversation was maybe a bit louder, a bit earlier here. Someone makes the joke. It's like, I don't think this is a bad joke, but bear with me. It is, you would be forgiven if you thought coronavirus caused the menopause, just because the kind of explosion in information happened at the same time. Like, to be clear, they are linked. But I do laugh about that because I think that it was just louder and it was, you know, in the news more here ahead of the US, but that's really caught up. I think the other things about starting a business here, like, have nothing to do with menopause and nothing to do with me. I think the EIS, you know, SEIS, EIS scheme is like great for a lot of entrepreneurs. I think UKRI grants, we've gotten three of those, and that has been huge in like, you know, low non-dilutive funding. Love that. So there are, I also think that you can get great talent at a lower cost here, especially technical talent. So like, I think there are loads of reasons in retrospect that like starting a business here has been good for us. But fundamentally, you know, private healthcare is rare and small here. And I do think there's a case for low-cost private care for specialized things like menopause. However, if you like look around and say, where is there a really large healthcare sector? Where are there a lot of women? Like, the US just feels a bit obvious. In 2022, Optum Ventures invested in us. And then I think we used the kind of strategic, like an investment by a big US healthcare strategic as a way to launch into the US. We also used a number of other partnerships just to make it a bit easier. So we linked up with Noom, the metabolic health app. The app. Yeah. And we wrote their menopause content in the app. And that was a really nice way to start getting our name out there. And that has a nice link to our content and to so people find Stella that way. And I think the big leap to the US, it's so much, right? Like it's a new compliance paradigm. It's a totally new model of delivering clinical care. It costs so much to set up. however, like fundamentally, women are women, and so the product resonates. Like, you
So
know,
is it the same? Is the product experience broadly similar?
broadly similar. The visit is a little bit longer because that ex the expectation is that the visit is a little bit is longer. But other than that, it's basically the same. A woman comes on, fills out our online assessment, which means we know a ton about her before she even sets foot or video foot into that clinical interaction, which means that the clinician knows about that woman already. She knows what she's looking for, her medical history, her symptom profile. So they have a really high value, really efficient, great conversation. And then medication, if it's appropriate and she chooses it. We don't mail it to her house in the US. She goes and picks it up at her local pharmacy, and that seemed to be wanted. And then we do the long tail lifestyle and behavior management through the app, just like in the UK. So honestly, it's basically the same.
And what does this, how does this parlay into insured cover for healthcare in the what happens with menopause and health insurance currently?
Yeah, look, I think most employees do not have menopause cover through their health plan, but that's like explicit menopause cover. So sure, they probably could see their PCP, like their primary care provider or their OBGYN, and have a con and kind of similar to the postcode lottery conversation about the UK, maybe they have a great doctor and they have a great conversation. Awesome. That's super. I'm so happy for you. Most don't. And so kind of specialized menopause care, I think, still is a really important addition to health plans. And so I think we're going to see a lot more employers asking their health plans to have a specific menopause cover in the coming years.
And is it, apart from that, is it just more of a market where people are up for paying for care?
So
Because that's quite, that's the thing that you often hear.
it is the thing that you often hear, and I think it's like a little bit n more nuanced than that, which is that like Americans expect it to be covered though. So they might pay out of pocket with the intention of claiming back. Like Americans pay a lot for their healthcare, and they also make decisions based on jobs, based on benefits, right? Like I think this idea that like D2C 100% out of pocket spending in the US is like freely available, I think is a little naive. Sure, there are tons of people who pay out of pocket and it's a bigger market than the UK, but fundamentally I think, you know, I find in the US our patients are really savvy customers. They are looking to see where their insurance is taken, where it's going to be covered, where the copay is the lowest. And that's where I think a big business is, right? Like, I think similar to here, like, sure, you can find a couple of patients at the top who pay top dollar, but if you really want to make a difference in terms of impact and scale, then you have to find a way to fit into the system. And that means insurance coverage in the US.
And how does it work with, is it Medicare, Medicaid are the sort of insurances of last resort? Is that fair? Like the low income ones? Or is that just med, is that age related?
One is age related and one is income related. And so Medicare is 65 plus, I believe. So not really the menopause
Not
group.
the menopause out of that bracket.
I actually find oftentimes with investors, I can tell they haven't really understood what I'm talking about when I talk about menopause because they'll go like, S and such a good Medicare play. And I think, okay, super, or not paying attention to me.
Not sure how many 65 year
Nice
olds
to
are
chat,
still.
James. See you later. So and then Medicaid is obviously income based.
And does that, do you think that that is going to play an issue? Does that play, that must play an issue with access to all kinds of different services, not just menopause, right? Because that, presumably that coverage is like not very extensive.
To be honest, I don't know a lot about Medicaid, and so I think that's probably a conversation to have with someone else. I think there are a few startup. There are a lot of startups in the U.S. who are looking explicitly at Medicaid, and I think that obviously that's great. And all women are going to cope with menopause, and so I think it's something that we would certainly want to look into, but not the place that we've started.
No, sure. And like, how are you finding running a transatlantic business?
I think they're like funny things to say. Like, I'm always surprised at the like level of translation required, like even just in our app, right? Like I'm like, this is an English app. Like how much change do we really need? Can't you just find and replace for like S's and Z's? No, actually, with an intimate topic like menopause, how you talk about sexual health, how you talk about like mood issues, how you talk about stuff really matters. And if you're busy telling Americans to like, pop on the kettle and have a cup of tea, and that's like
Yeah, no, I get it, but it's very,
like
it's a
not
very
right.
intimate, it's an extremely intimate, emotional, personal subject.
Yes,
If you're intending to sort of, is it called Stella over there? Have you chosen a different
yeah,
name?
it is called Stella. Whether that was right or not, we'll find
I don't
out.
know. Just,
Yeah,
I
neither
don't
do
know.
I. Seems fine so far. I
But yeah,
think,
if you're supposed to be interacting with a name, kind of a named person or a personal service, then if that service is responding in a language or even in like a, not a dialect, but you know, like a kind of a vocab that just jars, it's not going to help.
Totally. And so I think that there's so, I'm amazed at the like work required to get that right. So then you think like we'll speak to a partner and they'll be like, can you be live in Spain? And I just think, oh my God, the like translation effort of American of British English to American English, like Spanish feels like a big step. But need to do it eventually. So that's big. Time
Why?
zones, sorry.
Oh, go on, Karen, sorry.
Time zones are just a reality, right? Like, most of our US staff is on the East Coast, but we just had someone in California. And I think, like, if she starts her workday at 7 a.m., it's 3 o'clock in London. Like,
It's really hard.
it's
I mean,
really hard.
it's really
And
difficult.
so I think that's just stuff you have to manage and figure out a culture where, people don't always just feel on the back foot because they're trying to talk to someone who's still asleep. Probably like, there's something about empowerment and asynchronous communication that you have to get right. The systems are really different. And so also just from like a technical, the data requirements, right? Like we have totally separate data storage instance in the US because we have to. Okay, fine. Now, in order to be a healthcare provider, like we're HITRUST certified, right? So that's a it took forever. And you think, and then in the UK we have CQC, GDPR, and the MHRA. So we're just like, I think with every geography, you're like stacking the regulatory.
Like I think that's what people misunderstand about medical, the medical space, and like
Totally.
the they you know, and I think where you see businesses that don't have that, they end up being the lighter, softer, you know, kind of
Totally.
businesses that don't have that stuff, but then they don't have as much impact. But yeah, you basically end up just stacking all of these regulatory bodies and like regulatory debt, if you like, just on
Yeah,
top of each other.
totally. And it is, and it's really hard, but you have to do it right. I think that, like, one misstep there can be like existential for a healthcare company.
Yeah.
And should be, right? Like, this is an intimate topic, and women deserve to know that we are taking care of their data absolutely to the letter of the law. But I think I underestimated that, if I'm honest, just how much it would take, and also how much of it would be required. Because I think if you start in the US and you build in that way, like, then you build appropriately. But if you're like 2 years in and you've been building in an entirely different regime, like, regulation setup, and now do all this other stuff for compliance in order to like, and you got to do it all before you're making any real money.
It's this is
It
all
will
another thing
take,
people don't sometimes understand is like you have to do all this stuff before you sell it. You
yes. And
can't do it concurrently with selling it. It's a
no.
gate.
Yes, it is a gate. And I think, like, a lot of people in the UK startup scene talk about how our rounds are smaller and we raise less money. And I think previous to what I said earlier, where like maybe staff costs are a bit lower and that sort of thing, that's okay. But like to build a compliant US healthcare business on UK money, that is hard.
Just the scale of it, right? And I completely and also to try and figure out the integrations or whatever back up with the insurance systems and things like that. Like it's just such a big lift. So we've got a couple of minutes left, and I think I want to normally in this last couple of minutes, I ask the guests for what they have sort of what they hold true to keep themselves going, keep themselves sort of on mission, on task. Whether it's like advice or mottos or phrases or whatever, and anything that might be useful to sort of pass on to anyone listening who might be in a similar situation or thinking of starting a business or doing their own venture. So.
Yeah, I mean, you definitely could have prepped me for that one. I would have had something way more eloquent to say. But I do think that like the mission of our business is really clear, right? Like extending healthy life expectancy of women, getting better menopause care out, that's really fulfilling. And no day goes by where I'm like, gee, why am I doing this? Like that is sorted for us. I feel really good on that dimension. But like it only works and we only deliver on that mission if we actually grow as a business and if we serve more patients and like we, figure out all the other things. And so I think it comes back to like, I don't think I could do, I would not do this without a co-founder, like really enjoying the person that you set out to do this with and kind of splitting responsibilities and trying to find humor in the things that are really difficult or feel overwhelming. That's definitely important in what we're doing. And I think that, yeah, it's just like really hard. And I feel total confidence saying that. I don't, and I think that maybe a couple years ago, I definitely didn't know how hard it would be to build a business. And I think that that's lucky. Otherwise, maybe I wouldn't have done it. And so I think a bit of naivete in the beginning is really helpful for getting you to jump in.
I think definitely I would say the same thing. I think a bit of naivety helps, especially in stuff that's technical. You know, where you're like, oh yeah, how hard can that be? Oh, it's quite hard,
It's quite
actually.
hard. Yeah.
Brilliant. Well, look, Andrea, thank you very much for coming on. If people want to find out about Stella or Vera, where do they go?
Yeah, I mean, they go to the internet. We are at onstella.com, onstella.com. And that's where they can find us. We're on Instagram at stella.menopause. I occasionally write things on LinkedIn, very occasionally. But if you're kind of interested in menopause care and information about menopause, I'd go to the Stella website.
Great. Perfect. Well, look, and thank you to everyone listening. We'll be back again with another show next week. We're actually on a run now, pretty much into Christmas every week. So brilliant. Thanks to everyone for listening, and we'll be back again next week.
Settling.